You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Round the world with reporters.
With the name of martyr Qasim Soleimani decorating the Persian language department at the University of Sana'a, the first graduates of the department walking down it, reviving the memory of Haj Qasim, who they carried his name as a title for their badge.
When we talked about the Persian language, it was impossible to learn it because of the international fight against it, and whoever spoke it was considered as the enemy of Islam. Today, however, we have proof to the world that we and the Iranian people are brothers, and Islam unites us.
Graduates expressed their overwhelming joy of this accomplishment, stressing that their choice name for the Soleimani badge comes at a critical time in light of American unilateralism reaching its peak.
Martyr Soleimani is a force in the region, and his support for the Palestinian cause requires us to revive his memory by naming a badge in his name.
The ceremony came after Hassan Erlu presented his credentials to the president of the Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, as ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Yemen. This shows the depth of the Yemeni-Iranian relations, especially with the U.S. escalating its hostile policies towards the two countries and towards the resistance axis as a whole. Erlu's predecessor left Sana'a in September 2015, and in October last year, Iran's foreign ministry said the process of sending a new ambassador was hindered by attacks on the embassy.
While some Persian Gulf Arab states leaders rushed to normalize relations with the Zionist entity, Yemenis continued to reaffirm their support for the Palestinian cause. Abdulatif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Vienna pays tribute to the victims of Monday's terror attack carried out by a sympathizer of the Daesh terrorist group.
It's a really tense situation, something we never had before in Vienna. So Vienna was always a really secure place, and we felt really safe and protected, and suddenly, well, out of nowhere, this comes. I'm living nearby, and hearing this was really shocking.
As the nation tries to come to grips with the terrifying shooting, news has emerged of serious mishaps in the run-up to the crime.
Austria's interior minister confirmed the country did have intelligence that the gunman had traveled to Slovakia in search of ammunition in July. Apparently, a crucial tip was not followed up.
Karl Nehammer admitted to official errors.
Something obviously went wrong in our communications. An independent commission of inquiry has been set up.
In Parliament, his predecessor from the right-wing FPÖ party called for the minister's resignation. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has called for more decisive action at the EU level against what he termed political Islam. Earlier, he'd made it clear the attack should not be seen as a conflict between Christians and Muslims. Experts believe if the correct attributions are not made, it could trigger cultural wars in society.
If you define terrorism, it's the use of force against civilians in order to create fear for political purposes. So that's terrorism. That doesn't have, this definition doesn't have much to do with religion. So it's not necessary to call it Islamic or Islamist terror.
The 20-year-old gunman, an Austrian with North Macedonian roots, had been released from prison in December. Apparently, he misled the government's so-called de-radicalization program. The main worry now is how Europe is going to deal with what experts describe as the growing threat of homegrown terrorism. Homolinski, Vienna.
Thank you. Palestinian journalists in the blockaded Gaza Strip have marked the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists in front of the United Nations office. Journalists demanded an end to Israel's impunity and that Israeli leaders be held accountable for their crimes against Palestinian journalists. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate handed a memorandum to UN officials demanding protection for Palestinian journalists. Since the beginning of 2019, Israeli forces carried out hundreds of attacks against Palestinian journalists.
Attacks against journalists are systematic and take place almost every day. Israeli forces target Palestinian journalists in almost every protest or event. Since last year alone, Palestinian journalists were attacked over 750 times.
According to human rights organizations, Israeli forces killed 43 journalists over the last 20 years. Additionally, hundreds of journalists were seriously injured, sustaining permanent disabilities that will probably accompany them throughout their lives.
The United Nations must come out of its silence and protect Palestinian journalists who are constantly subjected to Israeli crimes. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinian journalists and injured hundreds more, while others are still in Israeli custody. We call on the United Nations to help bring Israeli criminals to justice at the International Criminal Court.
During the Great March of Return rallies, Israeli forces shot and killed two Palestinian journalists and injured hundreds while they were covering the peaceful action. Palestinian journalists say they work hard to avoid being part of the story themselves.
We are coming under deliberate and premeditated attacks by Israeli soldiers during the peaceful rallies. Israeli forces killed two of my colleagues and injured hundreds, and I was injured twice while covering the protests. Some of the journalists sustained permanent disabilities.
Experts say Israeli forces will continue with their violations against journalists as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye. Israeli attacks against journalists have increased in recent years. Palestinian journalists risk their lives on a daily basis to cover the news and expose the brutality of Israel. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Deaths in custody has been and remains a serious issue of concern for many in Britain in 2020, with countless individuals continuing to die in deeply suspicious circumstances while in the custody of the police. This year, the United Friends and Family Campaign, UFFC, launched their yearly March for Justice, with this year's event taking place online due to the current COVID-19 restrictions. Despite the calls for justice continuing over many decades, police accountability and real change remain as elusive as ever, especially for black communities, which, according to the facts, are more likely to fall victim to police violence.
I think that certainly the use of force, as described by the Metropolitan Police, the extent to which they use force when arresting black people, was six times more likely. And of course, that because we're more likely to suffer mental ill health, that is always another recurring feature, overwhelming and disproportionate force, when actually what somebody needs is a caring environment, yes, restrained, but they're not criminal, they're just mentally ill. And so these are the kind of recurring factors that we see evidenced in black deaths in custody.
I'm the twin of Leon Patterson, who died in police custody in Denton in 1992, 27th of November. He was arrested on suspicion of stealing a till, which was then proved not to be the case. He was held in police custody for 6 days and was found dead in the cell on the 27th of November. The outline that I got from the chief superintendent was that Leon basically beat himself to death by throwing himself around the cell.
3 decades on from Leon Patterson's death, and like so many cases, no officer has ever been charged or brought to justice.
When we did remove the sheet from the body, I mean, it was a bit of a to and fro to remove the sheet, because he went, "You can't touch it." He had the morgue attendants trying to hold down the sheet, and the officer just kept standing behind me saying, "You do know this is all self-inflicted, you do know that he did this to himself." And that's when we turned him over and saw all the bruises on the back and down his legs. So to keep saying that this is all self-inflicted was new.
Despite the calls for accountability and justice, far too many people fall victim to police violence, where far from upholding the law, they often break it with deadly consequences, knowing that they operate under a different set of laws which they themselves exist to uphold.
Deaths in custody remains an issue disproportionately affecting Britain's black communities. Despite promises to enact reforms, many argue that Britain's police remains institutionally racist. Under the current government and with racism on the rise, this situation could get a lot worse. Richard Sudam, London.
Sans doute plus dur.
In reaction to the stance of French President Emmanuel Macron in defense of the offensive caricatures of Prophet Muhammad, the Iranian daily Vatan Emruz published a cartoon of Emmanuel Macron represented as a demon, accompanied by the title The Devil of Paris. This cartoon came after a wave of angry protests and reactions swept across the Muslim world after the French president defended the Charlie Hebdo publication of the insulting Prophet Muhammad cartoon, declaring that France will not give up cartoons. The Macron remarks have triggered anti-French sentiments in the Muslim world, prompting calls for the boycott of French goods and an official apology.
I believe the republication of the offensive Prophet Muhammad cartoons is aimed at testing the unity of Muslims in the face of any sacrilegious act against their sanctities. The second point I think the French government is after is to make such insulting cartoons look normal and to promote hatred and Islamophobia in the world.
The publication of the cartoon of Prophet Muhammad outraged Muslims worldwide, but I believe the support of the French president for such offensive cartoons was much more insulting and indeed added fuel to the fire of Muslims' anger.
Daily Kayhan demanded that the French ambassador be expelled from Iran, believing that it would be the least thing to be done in response to Macron's insolence.
The publication of Prophet Muhammad's cartoon shows that the freedom of expression is just a pretext in the hands of the French government and its allies to spread Islamophobia across the world.
Meanwhile, leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei in a letter has urged the French youth to question the so-called reason underpinning French President Emmanuel Macron's support for insult against the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, in the name of freedom of speech. After the message of the leader to the French youth, the French Instagram account of the leader's website was blocked. The move is viewed by experts as a double standard policy of the West towards the so-called freedom of expression. At the same time, Iran's president Hassan Rouhani has said any affront directed at the Prophet of Islam is in fact an insult to human values, morality and freedom. President Rouhani has said that supporting those who insult the Prophet of Islam amounts to supporting vice, desecration and extremism. Also in a statement, 240 Iranian lawmakers lashed out at the French government for the move. Moreover, Iranians from all walks of life took part in a protest rally in front of the French embassy in Tehran to protest against the French magazine Charlie Hebdo and the publication of an image of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Iranians believe that fueling Islamophobia and hatred in the name of freedom of expression, which should serve understanding, empathy and peaceful coexistence between human societies, is regrettable. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
These fighter jets are aligned in one of Iran's major airbases, dubbed Shahid Babai, located in Isfahan province. Their mission is to fly some 250 kilometers away to hit their simulated enemy targets. This is part of the last phase of a large-scale maneuver held by the Iranian Army's Air Force. During the two-day drill, Air Force personnel practiced air-to-air shooting, air-to-surface bombardment using smart bombs and rockets, and radar and thermal missiles. Military officials here say the drill was a success.
We conduct such drills to bolster our defense might. We need to be strong to deter any prospect of war on the part of our enemies. And what we learned through this maneuver is that we have it in ourselves to nip any threat in the bud.
Iran's Air Force, among other units of the country's military sector, have been under 4 decades of U.S.-led sanctions. This has led the Islamic Republic to rely on its own expertise to build up its defense arsenal. Last month, the United Nations Security Council terminated its arms embargo against Tehran amid a strong opposition from the U.S. Iran emphasizes that with or without the arms bans, the country is capable of defending its security.
The U.S. thought wrongly that its so-called maximum pressure against Iran would bring us to our knees. We proved during the sanctions that any pressure imposed by the United States is doomed to failure. Today, the lifting of the UN arms bans definitely gives us an edge. But more importantly, it isolated Washington on the international stage.
Iran's army says today the Islamic Republic produces over 80% of its defense equipment domestically. This, as Tehran underlines, that its military might is based on the doctrine of defense, and that the country will never be the first to pull the trigger.
The Iranian Army's Air Force says it owes its might to decades of arms embargoes led by the U.S., which sought to undermine Iran's security. But in fact, it forced the country to stand on its own feet and indigenize its defense sector. And now that the arms bans are lifted, military officials here say this will definitely give the Islamic Republic an extra boost in its defense agenda. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drills.
Starting on Tuesday, November 3rd, there will be a second lockdown in Austria to contain a massive second wave of COVID-19 infections across Europe. All events will be cancelled. Hotels, restaurants and bars will close, and a curfew will be in place between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Universities and classes for older students will switch to distance learning. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz told The Nation, "We will have to do without a lot of what makes up our lives."
If the number of new infections continues to grow so rapidly, Austria's healthcare system, although it's one of the best in the world, will soon be out of capacity.
The country's health minister says Austria is in a race against time.
The turnaround must be achieved by mid-November, otherwise doctors will have to choose who to treat via triage. If we act now, we can gradually begin reopening at the beginning of December.
Health authorities are worried about the repercussions of an explosion of infections in October. On Saturday, more than 5,300 new infections were reported across the country, five times more than just 2 weeks ago. As a tourist and sport nation, Austria is affected particularly hard by the restrictions. The government has announced that affected businesses will get 80% of their revenue from the same month last year reimbursed if they keep all their employees on the payroll. Anyone not following the new rules could face fines reaching up to 1,500 euros.
The question that everyone wants an answer for is when all this will end. The definitive end of all measures will only be possible when there's an effective vaccine, experts say. Austria's chancellor told the people he's confident they can have a normal summer again in 2021. Homa Leski, Vienna.
Flags at half-mast as Austria mourns a shocking terrorist attack that left five people dead and up to 17 others injured. The victims include an elderly man and woman, a young passerby and a waitress. The attacker himself, who's said to have fired randomly at people, was shot dead by police. Authorities have now confirmed he was a 20-year-old with Austrian citizenship and North Macedonian roots. The unnamed individual was sentenced to 22 months in prison back in April 2019 for attempting to travel to Syria to join the Daesh terrorist group. He'd been released from prison in December. Interior Minister Karl Nehammer said it's a situation Austria has never experienced before. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz said the attack represented a hatred of Austria's way of life, pointing out that the enemy was neither a population group or a member of a religious community. Several people have already been arrested as police search for possible further perpetrators.
Vienna's inner city was at the heart of a large-scale anti-terrorist operation on Monday night. The now identified perpetrator was shot and killed by police shortly after 8 p.m. His apartment was forcibly opened with explosives and searched. As of now, downtown Vienna has been declared a red zone, meaning it's the most susceptible to possible further attacks. Homa Leski, Vienna.
The United States' separating of Iran from the global financial system has hindered the Islamic Republic's ability to secure supplies of food and drugs as it struggled to rein in a resurgence of the coronavirus outbreak. The U.S. Treasury has time and again claimed that these items are exempted from the sanctions on the Islamic Republic. To delve into the issue, we talked to some MPs to see how Washington's targeting of over a dozen of banks has paralyzed import of drugs.
This is not true. Food and drugs have not been accepted from sanctions. In cases, the Islamic Republic has faced very cruel sanctions in its food and medicine sector. The United States has imposed unlawful sanctions on medical needs of those suffering from rare diseases. They are limiting Iran's access to raw materials to stir up anger among people.
One of the fields in which they are putting pressure on the Iranian nation is the pharmaceutical sector. Medicines are not used in military or nuclear sphere. The sick people need the drugs, but Washington has restricted the import of tablets and injection shots. This reveals their enmity with the Iranian people. I think our people are paying the price of standing on their own feet.
Drug and medical supply companies in Iran are now saying that the new sanctions have affected their work. Iran makes many of its needed drugs inside the country through pharmaceutical research, but treatments for cancer or rare diseases and transplants often rely on imports.
We must expand our knowledge. We must be aware that Iran will always be under sanctions by the Zionists and the U.S. Day by day, these sanctions will be expanded, so we need to have the knowledge to meet our needs by producing medicines domestically.
Iranians' access to medicine and their right to health is being threatened and may worsen if the situation does not change.
After sanctioning 18 Iranian banks as part of its maximum pressure policy, in its latest move, the U.S. government sanctioned Iran's oil minister, oil industry, and related companies. Mouman Abedi, Tehran.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. One of the most important topics in Islamic ethics is the topic of yaqeen or certainty. The difference between us and the infallible imams and generally infallibles is while we believe in something and we are not certain about it, they believe in something and they are certain. For example, about committing sins. While we know that when we commit sin, inevitably we go to hell, at the same time we commit sin, they believe in the same fact, but they know that committing sin is equal to going to the hell. And they see this fact as we see something by our eyes. So while we are not sure about something that we know, they are sure about the result of everything. As a result, they never commit sin as infallibles, but there is probability and possibility of committing sin by us. For the same reason, we have a famous narration from Imam Ali, peace be upon him. He says, لَوْ كُشِفَ الْغَطَاءَ مَزْدَتُ يَقِينَ. If the veils were to be uncovered, my conviction would not increase. When the veils that normally are in front of our eyes be uncovered, be removed. Because Imam Ali has reached the level of certainty, there is no difference between witnessing and saying with this type of bills or without this type of bills. And the last narration that I want to explain it a little bit is once again another narration which is narrated from Imam Ali, peace be upon him. بِالْيَقِينْ تُدْرَكُ الْغَايَةُ الْقُصْوَى. With conviction, the ultimate goal could be reached. The ultimate goal. What is the ultimate goal of the creation of human beings? What is the ultimate goal? When we study our Islamic teachings, we realize that one of the most important goals of the creation of the human being is to be vicegerent of God. To be vicegerent of God on earth. This is one of the most important goals of the creation of human being. And to be vicegerent of God requires being similar to God. And this is exactly the meaning of perfection and completion. Probably you have heard, we want to be close to God. We want to be closer and closer to God. And finally, we want to reach God. What is the meaning of closer to God? What's the meaning of reaching God? The meaning is to fulfill those beautiful attributes of God in yourself more and more. And whenever you fulfill those attributes in yourself at the highest level, you have reached completion and perfection. You are more similar to God in comparison to anyone else. This is the meaning of perfection and completion.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far.
down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
You would not be able to achieve this goal unless you achieve annihilation in God. You have to ignore yourself. Something that our prophets and our imams have fulfilled, have achieved in their lives. For the same reason, it's interesting to know, let me mention the name of the late Imam Khomeini. He was saying that the prophets of God do not have the attributes of sacrifice or altruism, al-ithar. They do not have such an attribute. It's interesting. It's a merit. It's a virtue. It's a good attribute. At the same time, they did not have it. Why? Imam Khomeini says because they, first of all, you have to know the meaning of sacrifice or isar. Isar is when you prefer someone else over yourself. This is the meaning of isar. Okay? But in the case of the prophets of God, because they did not see themselves, they were ignoring themselves in front of God, there was nothing to be witnessed in front of God as a result to prefer God over yourself. You are nothing. Everything is God. So ithar would be meaningless. You do not prefer God over yourself. Rather, you do whatever you do for something that exists, which is God. You are nothing in front of God. So you are nothing in order to be preferred over God. This is the reason of that comment of the late Imam Khomeini. As a result, you have to reach the level of annihilation. You have to ignore yourself. And you would not be able to reach that level unless you reach the level of certainty. When you are certain about God, as a result, you are certain about the essence, attributes, and manifestations of God, you're going to achieve the ultimate goal of the creation. And the last point is, in our supplications, we ask God to give us that in introductory measure in order to achieve this blessing of God. What is that introductory measure, which is considered to be a premise to achieve that goal? Is to to be awakened by the love of God. We shall not reach the level of conviction unless you be awakened by the love of God. As a result, it's easy to pass the level of doubt and to reach the level of certainty. You want to commit sin, you would not have the power to avoid committing sin unless you love God. For your beloved, you avoid committing sin. You obey your beloved. Step by step, you're going to pass the position of doubt and to reach the level of certainty. Thank you very much for your time and attention. I ask Almighty God to give us this tawfiq to be awakened by Himself, His messenger, and the successors of His messenger, to have this tawfiq to gain the blessing of certainty. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Rahmallahu man qara'a al-Fatiha ma salama. Allahumma salli ala
فرش التراب يضمني وهو غطائي حول الرمال تلفني بل من ورائي واللحد يحكي ظلمة فيها ابتلائي والنور خط كتابه أنسي
from east to west. Throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Except for China, where output is expected to exceed 2019 levels this year, output in both advanced economies and emerging market and developing economies is projected to remain below 2019 levels, even next year. Countries that rely more on contact-intensive services and oil exporters face weaker recoveries compared to manufacturing-led economies. The divergence in income prospects between advanced economies and emerging and developing economies, excluding China, triggered by coronavirus pandemic, is projected to worsen. Geeta Gopinath, the economic counselor and director of the research department at the International Monetary Fund, IMF, said, "We are upgrading our forecast for advanced economies for 2020 to 5.8%, followed by a rebounding growth to 3.9% in 2021. For emerging market and developing countries excluding China, we have a downgrade with growth projected to be 5.7% in 2020 and then a recovery to 5% in 2021. With this, the cumulative growth in per capita income for emerging market and developing economies, excluding China, over 2020-2021 is projected to be lower than for the advanced economies. This crisis will likely leave scars well into the medium term as labor markets take time to heal, investment is held back by uncertainty, and balance sheet problems and lost schooling impairs human capital. I prepare for you an article authored by Geeta Gopinath, the economic counselor and director of the research department at the International Monetary Fund, IMF. The piece is titled A Long, Uneven and Uncertain Ascent. The article has taken from the International Monetary Fund website. Please stay with us for more of Geeta Gopinath's article. COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread with over 1 million lives tragically lost in the globe so far. Living with the novel coronavirus has been a challenge like no other, but the world is adapting. As a result of eased lockdowns and the rapid deployment of policy support at an unprecedented scale by central banks and governments around the world, the global economy is coming back from the depths of its collapse in the first half of this year. Employment has partially rebounded after having plummeted during the peak of the coronavirus crisis. However, this crisis is far from over. Employment remains well below pre-pandemic levels, and the labor market has become more polarized, with low-income workers, the young and women, being harder hit. The poor are getting poorer, with close to 90 million people expected to fall into extreme deprivation and poverty this year. The ascent out of this calamity is likely to be long, uneven, and highly uncertain. It is essential that fiscal and monetary policy support are not prematurely withdrawn as best possible. In our latest World Economic Outlook, we continue to project a deep recession in 2020. Global economic growth is projected to be -4.4%, an upward revision of 0.8 percentage points compared to our June update. This upgrade owes to somewhat less dire outcomes in the second quarter of this year, as well as signs of a stronger recovery in the third quarter, offset partly by downgrades in some emerging and developing economies. In 2021, economic growth is projected to rebound to 5.2%, -0.2 percentage points below our June projection. Except for China, where output is expected to exceed 2019 levels this year, output in both advanced economies and emerging market and developing economies is projected to remain below 2019 levels even next year. Countries that rely more on contact-intensive services and oil exporters face weaker recoveries compared to manufacturing-led economies. The divergence in income prospects between advanced economies and emerging and developing economies, excluding China, triggered by this pandemic, is projected to worsen. We are upgrading our forecast for advanced economies for 2020 to -5.8%, followed by a rebounding growth to 3.9% in 2021. For emerging market and developing countries, excluding China, we have a downgrade, with economic growth projected to be -5.7% in 2020, and then a recovery to 5% in 2021. With this, the cumulative growth in per capita income for emerging market and developing economies, excluding China, over the period 2020-2021 is projected to be lower than that for advanced economies. This crisis will likely leave scars well into the medium term, as labor markets take time to heal, investment is held back by uncertainty and balance sheet problems, and lost schooling impairs human capital. After a rebound in 2021, global economic growth is expected to gradually slow down to about 3.5% into the medium term. The cumulative loss in output relative to the pre-pandemic projected path is projected to grow from $11 trillion over 2020-2021 to $28 trillion over 2020-2025. This represents a severe setback to the improvement in average living standards across all country groups. There remains tremendous uncertainty around the outlook, with both downside and upside risks. The virus is resurging, with localized lockdowns being reinstituted. If this worsens and prospects for treatment and vaccines deteriorate, the toll on economic activity would be severe and likely amplified by severe financial market turmoil. Growing restrictions on trade and investment and rising geopolitical uncertainty could harm the economic recovery. On the upside, though, faster and more widespread availability of tests, treatment, vaccines, and additional policy stimulus can significantly improve the outcome. The considerable global fiscal support to close to $12 trillion and the extensive interest rate cuts, liquidity injections, and asset purchases by central banks helped save lives and livelihoods and prevented a financial catastrophe. There is still much that needs to be done to ensure a sustained recovery. First of all, greater international collaboration is needed to end this health crisis. Tremendous progress is being made in developing tests and treatment and vaccines, but only if countries work closely together will there be enough production and widespread distribution to all parts of the world. We estimate that if medical solutions can be made available faster and more widely relative to our baseline, it could lead to a cumulative increase in global income of almost $9 trillion by the end of 2025, raising incomes in all countries and reducing income divergence. Secondly, to the extent possible, policies must aggressively focus on limiting persistent economic damage from the crisis. Governments should continue to provide income support through well-targeted cash transfers, wage subsidies, and unemployment insurance. To prevent large-scale bankruptcies and ensure workers can return to productive jobs, vulnerable but viable firms should continue to receive government support wherever possible, through tax deferrals, moratoria on debt service, and equity-like injections. Over time, as the economic recovery strengthens, policy should shift to facilitating reallocation of workers from sectors likely to shrink on a long-term basis, such as the travel sector, to growing sectors such as e-commerce. Workers should be supported through this adjustment with income transfers, retraining, and reskilling. Supporting reallocation will also require steps to speed up bankruptcy procedures and resolution mechanisms to efficiently tackle firm insolvencies. A public green structure investment push in times of low interest rates and high uncertainty can significantly increase jobs and accelerate the economic recovery, whilst also serving as an initial big step towards reducing carbon emissions. Emerging markets and developing economies are having to manage this crisis with fewer resources, as many are constrained by elevated debt and higher borrowing costs. These economies will need to prioritize critical spending for health and transfer to the poor and ensure maximum efficiency. They will also need continued support in the form of international grants and concessional financing and debt relief in some cases. Where debt is unsustainable, it should be restructured sooner rather than later to free up finances to deal with the crisis. Lastly, policy should be designed with an eye towards placing economies on path of stronger, equitable and sustainable growth. The global easing of monetary policy, whilst essential for the recovery, should be complemented with measures to prevent build-up of financial risk over the medium term, and central bank independence should be safeguarded at all costs. Needed fiscal spending and the output collapse have driven global sovereign debt levels to a record 100% of global GDP or gross domestic product. Whilst low interest rates alongside the projected rebound in economic growth in 2021 will stabilize debt levels in many countries, all will benefit from a medium-term fiscal framework to give confidence that debt remains sustainable. In the future, governments will likely need to raise the progressivity of their taxes, whilst ensuring that corporations pay their fair share of taxes, alongside eliminating wasteful spending. Investments in the health sector, digital infrastructure, green infrastructure, and education can help achieve productive, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth. And expanding the safety net where gaps exist can ensure the most vulnerable are protected while supporting near-term activity. This is the worst crisis since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and it will take significant innovation on the policy front at both the national and international levels to recover from this calamity. The challenges are daunting, but there are reasons to be hopeful. The exceptional policy response, including the establishment of the European Union Pandemic Recovery Package Fund and the use of digital technologies to deliver social assistance, are a powerful reminder that the well-designed policies protect people and collective economic well-being. At the International Monetary Fund, IMF, we have provided funding at record speed to 81 member states since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, granted debt relief, and called for expanded debt service suspension for low-income countries and for reform of the international debt architecture. Building on these actions, policies for the next stage of the crisis must seek lasting improvements in the global economy that create prosperous futures for all of us.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson: what breaks a person's back? Today we're going to discuss three types of people. These people are the ones who take the loss. Well, the first category is those who magnify their deeds. They will sit back, well satisfied with their work. Their attitude hinders them from progress and development. The second type of people are those who forget their sins will continue with new sins every day instead of compensating for their previous sins. Suddenly, one day, they will find themselves down in depths of despair. The third category is people who rely on their own opinion. It will deprive themselves of valuable and essential knowledge and thinking of brilliant minds. They will be repeatedly involved in mistakes, and finally, their backs will break under the burden of the resulting problems. So these are the three categories which we see take the loss. They take the detriment, and they're the ones who actually bear so many difficulties in their lives, but they don't learn the lesson. So we're discussing these three types today. So the first one is those who magnify their deeds. The second one is those who forget their sins. And then the third one is people who are opinionated in a way that they do not listen to anyone else's opinion. They don't take input. They're just, you know, my way or highway type of people. These three types, in the light of Quranic verses and the traditions of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, are the ones who take the loss in this life. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing about three groups of people who take the loss. They are the one who have to face detrimental results of their approach that they have taken in their lives. Imam Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth infallible Imam, says, the three types of individuals who destroy themselves. Number one, the one who magnifies his good deeds. Number two, the one who forgets his sins. Number three, the one who is opinionated. Brothers and sisters, magnifying one's good deeds is really, really unhealthy, and this is something that destroys one's spirituality. This is something that actually destroys that good deed itself, the reward of that good deed, because they are magnifying their good deed. Something good that they have done in their lives, they want everybody around them to know about it. And this is something which is not appreciated in Islam. Those who forget about their own sins, you know, just you can well imagine these self-righteous people, you know, they think that they have not done anything wrong and everybody around them is some sort of a sinner, but they are so clean, so pious. You know, these are again the people who forget about their own mistakes, their shortcomings, their sins. They are the ones who destroy themselves in the light of the hadith of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Last but not the least, people who are opinionated. You know, they just take this high-end approach and they're always like, my way or the highway. You know, whatever I'm saying is right and nobody else has any opinion whatsoever. And even if somebody is expressing their opinion in front of them, they give them a shut-up call. So these are the three types of people who actually destroy themselves in this life and unfortunately in many cases in the hereafter. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.